We're holding on Nuntes Amud Beis, the second Mishnah. Mishnah says, so now from here until the end of the Perek, we're going to be dealing with the Nezek of fire. So far we've covered the other Ovis Nezikin. Now we're going to be covering the Av Nezek of fire from here till the end of the Perek. So the Mishnah says, Hashaleach HaSabeira, if a person sends a fire, and we're going to see what kind of fire we're talking about, the Yad Cheresh Shoit of a cotton, in the hands of a Cheresh Shoit of a cotton, so now they don't have Das, so you can't be Mechai of them, and as far as the one who sent them, Potter B'dinah Odom, Mechai B'dinah Shemayim, he's Potter according to human law, and he's Chayev according to Hashem's law, meaning that if he wants to avoid punishment by Hashem, he better pay up the person that he caused the fire on. As we'll see in the Gemara, why that should be. Basically, it's going to come down to that it wasn't only he that did the damage; it involved the cheresh shoit of a cotton as well, and therefore, so you can't be mechayev of him. So you can't be mechayev of him on those grounds. With that said, the Ritva brings an opinion that says that this is when he sent them with the fire, but he didn't actually tell them, go burn down such and such. He was careless and he sent them with a fire. We'll see in the Gemara whether it means that he sent them with an open flame or with materials for making a fire, whatever. The point is, the Ritva says, if he were to actually tell them, go set a fire in such and such a place, then he would actually be chayev for what they do, because then literally he's telling them what to do. But again, not everybody agrees to that, because the fact is we do say in shliach l'dvar aveira, and here we're talking a cheresh shoit of a cotton who don't have any das. Okay. On the other hand, sholach biyad pikeach, if he sent the fire with a pikeach, then with a normal person, pikeach chayev, then the pikeach is the one who's chayev for whatever happens with the fire. Here we would say the mishaloyach is potter completely because after all the hezek comes exclusively from the shliach. Since we say ein shliach l'dvar aveira, therefore as usual we can't hold the mishaloyach responsible. Only the shliach. Now over here, now we did learn at the beginning of the perek, what about though, we said, for example, a person hired false edim or things like that. We said he's potter b'dinei adam b'chayev b'dinei shemayim. Why over here are we saying that, why here are we saying that he's chayev, that he's potter completely, implying even b'dinei shemayim? So one point would be because we talked about at the beginning of the perek, he hired the Edim. Tosfos had made the point over there that we were talking about when he hired the Edim, where there's a much higher likelihood that they're going to listen to him. Whereas here, we're just talking to, he's telling the guy to, he's giving the guy a fire, or even maybe telling him to go set the fire, but not actually hiring him to do that. There's different other explanations, including that within Dinei Shamayim itself, The Pnei Yeshua brings over here from the Chavis Yor that there's a difference between, even within Dinei Shemayim itself, there's a difference between a greater punishment and a lesser punishment. Min HaShemayim, that at least over here you would have the lesser one. Anyway, so that's the distinction, whether he sends with a Cheresh Shoit of a cotton or a Pekeach. Continues the Mishnah. Echad Hevi Esaur, suppose that one person had brought a fire to a certain place, the echad heviyasa eitzim, so now by itself that fire wouldn't have spread very, very far. Then somebody else brought the wood, hameviyasa eitzim chayev, then the one who brought the wood is the one who's chayev for the fire spreading, because the fire wouldn't have accomplished anything without that guy bringing the wood. The other way around, echad heviyasa eitzim, the echad heviyasa ur, if one person brought one person brought the wood, where the wood by itself, of course, is not going to do anything, and only once you bring a fire, then it's going to do something. Then the one who brings the fire is chayev, because again he's the one who made things happen. So the rule would be basically that the last one who got involved over here would be the one who's chayev. The Rashba mentions it, what if both of them brought it at the same time, then both of them are going to be chayev. Continues the Mishnah. Ba'acha v'liba. Now, what happens if somebody else goes and blows on the fire to make it bigger? So beforehand we were talking about where there was fire and there was wood, and a ruach mitzuyah would be enough to whip up the fire and make it cause damage. So now what happens is, if without that the fire wasn't spreading, ruach v'liba, somebody else comes and blows on the fire, hamala b'chayev, then the one who blows on it is the one who's chayev. Libsa haruach, on the other hand, if it was an unusually strong wind that whipped up the fire, kulam p'turin, then all of them are potter because they didn't have to expect that there would be a ruach she'ena mitzuya. Now, Tosfos discusses over here in some detail that we're talking about. First Tosfos says that we're talking about that even a ruach mitzuya came and blew it up. And then Tosfos says, well, one second, then if a ruach mitzuya would have been enough to cause damage, then why shouldn't the people who brought the wood or the fire be potter? So Tosfos gets into some discussion about it and says that no, actually, what it means is, in other words, the Gemara is going to discuss the case where one person blew on it and then the wind also blew on it, and the combination of that is what made the fire a damaging one. So our Mishnah could mean a similar kind of thing, where it says libsa ruach means basically there was the one person was blowing on it, but without the wind, it couldn't have caused damage. And therefore, you could argue that he's potter. But then Tosfos says that no, what it means is that it means that it was a ruach she'ena mitzuya. It means all of a sudden an unusually strong wind came and whipped it up, and therefore that's why we're saying that all of them are potter. Okay, the Gemara starts off. Omer Shlokish Mishmei Dechizkia Loi Shanu. This that we said in the Mishnah about the case where he gives a fire to a cheder shoyt of a cotton, and we're saying that he's potter and dinei adam. So Rishlokish is saying in the name of Chizkia, Loi Shanu Elisha Masala Gachelis. That would apply only if he gave the guy a burning coal. Now a coal without actually blowing on it, it's not going to get very far. It's not going to become much of a fire. The liba, and then the cheresh shoyt v'katan blew on it, and therefore made it into an actual flame that could cause damage. Avol mosolei shel heves, but Rish Lakish is saying in the name of Chizkia, but if he gave him an open flame, chayev, then the one who sent him is going to be chayev. My timer, maisev kagon v'loy, because after all, his maisim caused it, because now he gave the cheresh shoyt v'katan everything that's usable, everything that's needed in order for it to become a damaging fire. So therefore he should be chayev. Earlier in the Masechta, we discussed this point as well. There the Gemara had brought it and had said that Rish Lakish had said that bori hezeka, what you have is there the hezek is very clear. It's not like with a coal, it might blow up, it might instead go out. Whereas over here with an open flame, there's no question that it's going to be ready to cause hezek. Anyway, so that's the point of Rish Lakish. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, I feel muscle I shall have a spotter. Even if he gave the guy an open flame, the cheresh shoyt v'katan, an open flame, he would also be potter. My time at savse the cheresh gomaloi, because it's the combination of the fire plus the cheresh that causes the damage. Rashi over here translates tzavsa as meloshen tzvas, like you have in Pirkei Avos, af tzvas b'tzvas asuya. So it means literally the tongs. So it means the fact that the cheresh shoyt v'katan is holding on to the fire. That's what. So in other words, you have a combination over here of the cheresh who is not under his control and the fire which is. So Rashi had also given over there a different explanation that the word is tzavsa with a vav, like we have mitzvah meloshen tzavsa b'chibur, where it means the connection, the combination of the two of them. So whatever the case, the point is, in other words, that we're saying that we're saying that it's not just the fire by itself. The fact there's the cheresh, shoter katan, involved over here, and they're not under his control, and therefore it can't be considered that he directly caused the hezek. Now we did learn earlier in the Masechta, we had a different machlokas, Rabbi Yechon and Resh Lakish, where this came into the picture as well, about Isha Mishum Mamoni or Isha Mishum Chitzav, on what grounds are we machayev a person for a fire of his spreading. We said it's a matter of that his fire is a mamoin, like as a mamoin of his, as a property of his, like anything else, and the same way as he has a responsibility to watch his shur, the same way he has a responsibility to watch his fire. Or is it chitzav? It's considered like the fire is considered a direct hezek, as if he was shooting arrows in his property and they landed in somebody else's property. So we had a machlokas where Rabbi Yochanan said isha mishum chitzav, but and according to that, you could argue that here it's the cheresh shooting the arrow in effect. But the Gemara ended up saying over there that Rabbi Yochanan does agree that isha mishum mamone as well. So then the question was, well, then why is Rabbi Yechanan pattering him here in the case of the cheresh shoter b'katan if he gives him an open flame? So Tosfos had explained differently that when we say tzav se de cheresh kagorim, what we mean is, in other words, that on the one hand, the cheresh is the one who actually set the fire. On the other hand, the fact is the cheresh may watch it a little bit. I mean, he won't watch it as well as a pikeach does. We had something in that connection in the first parak. For example, when you give your shur to a cheresh to watch and it gets free and then it gets loose over there. So Tosfos had learned over there that actually what happens is the cheresh may not have full das, but he is capable of watching the animal, or in this case, the fire, to some extent. So therefore, it's not as bori hezeka. It's not as clear that there's definitely going to be a hezek, and therefore that would be grounds to pater the one who gave him the fire. Okay. So Rabbi Yochanan continues, v'loy michayev, so when would the one who gives him the fire be chayev, only if ad sheyimzo le gavza. Now the Ramban does bring that if the cheresh were to take this flame and actually go and set something on fire on it, even Rabbi Yochanan would agree that he is chayev. All we're talking about is where he put the flame down, and then a normal wind, for example, came and spread it. Where had it been a pikeach, the pikeach alone would be chayev. Here you can't be mechayev the cheresh for it. He didn't deliberately set the fire. He just put it someplace where it could spread. That would be where we'd say that the one who sent it with him is potter. Anyway, so Rabbi Yochanan says, "V'loy mechayev ad sheyimso legavza." When would the one who gave him the fire be chayev? Only if he gave him gavza, which Rashi translates as thorns. Earlier in the Masechta, Rashi translated it as dry wood, stilta, or he gives him small chips of wood, which are the kind of things that are easily flammable, shraga, and he gives him a lamp with a burning flame in it. Dahu vade maisa diday, then definitely we can consider he gave him not only the flame, but everything that's needed in order for the flame to spread. So therefore, then definitely we can put that on the one who gave the cheresh shoter b'katan, all those materials, and therefore he would be a pesheya, and therefore he'd be chayev for anything that happens as a result of that fire. Now, continues the Gemara. We said in the Mishnah, Sholach b'yad pikeach chayev v'chola. We said if you sent the fire with pikeach, then the pikeach is chayev. And then the Mishnah had gone on to describe the case where different people contributed to the fire by one bringing the fire and the other one the wood, or the other way around. And then we mentioned if somebody blew on it. The expression for blowing on it in the Mishnah is liba. So Omer Rav Nachman Yitzchak, now there were two different versions of that going around in Rav Nachman Yitzchak's time. One was the word libo with a lamed, and the other, some people learned the Mishnah as the word niba with a beis. So Omer Rav Nachman Yitzchak, mandatoni libo loy mishtabish, or mandatoni niba loy mishtabish. Whether you're learning the word liba or niba, it's not incorrect. We can find sources in Torah for both of those readings, for both of those versions. We find it's in this week's parasha, actually, when Moshe sees the fire in the snare, and the snare is not burning. The expression is that a malach appeared to Moshe belabas esh, in a flame of fire in the snare. So we see that the word laba, lamed beis hey, means a flame, and therefore that can justify in our Mishnah calling, making the flame bigger can be called libu, can be called that he was malaba. And the one who says niba is also not making a mistake. You can justify that also. As the pasuk says, Hashem who creates the speech of the lips. Now, when a person speaks, air comes out of their mouth. Therefore, we can use the word niba from the related to the word niv to refer to when a person blows air out of his mouth and fans the flame with it. So either version, liba or niba, would work. Bechlal, by the way, we find a number of times where a lamed and a nun interchange in Gemara terminology. We have, for example, let's say sometimes the Gemara will say lema, which means shall we say, or sometimes it'll be nema. You have different examples like that where within Aramaic and between Aramaic and Lashon Kodesh, you sometimes have interchanges like that. Okay. Now, we said in the Mishnah, Libsa Ruach Kulan Pturin, we said if the wind blew on the flame, then all of them are potter. And again, we discussed what kind of wind are we talking about. Are we talking about that it was a normal wind, or are we talking about that it was an unusually strong wind? So now the Gemara brings in this connection, Tanan Abanan, Liba V'Libsa Ruach, what if one person blew on the flame and the wind also blew on it? So is he chayev or not? If his blowing on it is enough to fan the flame and to make it large enough to actually spread, chayev, then he's going to be chayev. Vim lav potter, and if not, then he's going to be potter because he wouldn't have been able to accomplish it by himself. Now Tosfos again has another discussion over here on this point. Tosfos starts by saying the wind itself was not strong enough that all by itself the flame would have been fanned to the point of being able to spread. Otherwise, what's the difference? Otherwise, what's the difference? The guy blowing on it as well. It would have caused damage anyway. So Tosfos gets into some further discussion about that, about the ins and outs of that, when we would say that he's potter. So the question is, why is he potter? Why should he be potter? Lehevi kizurda v'ruach mesayata. Why shouldn't we compare it to the case where we know that one of the malachas of Shabbos is zurda, is not to winnow the grain, which involves that you take the mixture of grain and straw, you throw it up into the air. Then you throw it up into the air. You let the wind carry away the straw and shells and things like that, which are lighter, and then the heavier grain falls to the ground. So, kizorda v'ruach mesayata. If a person were to do zorda on Shabbos and the wind helps him out because the wind blows away the straw and shells and things, then he would be chayev. So we see that even though he's doing incidentally, the Yerushalmi mentions in that connection nowadays, most of us are not farmers, but a more common example of that kind of thing the Yerushalmi brings would be, for example, spitting into the wind, where the wind then is going to carry away the spit. So that would be the saliva. So that would be a tool that the Yerushalmi says of Zoda. Anyway, the point is that there you have, by yourself, you wouldn't have been able to accomplish the malacha by yourself. The wind comes and helps you out, and yet we're saying a person is chayev for that. So why shouldn't it be the same thing over here as far as the fire? Why should we say that he's potter because the wind was involved as well? Amar Abaya, hocha mayaskin kunchal liba mitzad echad v'libatu haruach mitzad ach. So Abaya says, because you're talking about over here, when are we saying that he's potter? Is that actually we're talking about he and the wind blew from different directions. So he blew from one direction, and that didn't accomplish anything. And the wind came and blew it from a different direction. So we don't mean that he plus the wind helped it spread. We mean, in other words, that what he was trying to do from his side didn't help anything. Only the blowing from the other side, the wind, is what actually caused the fire to spread. That's according to Rashi. Tosfos discusses that no, what it means is that one possibility is that in fact, if he had only just as blowing from one side, it's a small flame, so it would have gone out. Now the wind came and blew it from another direction, and instead whipped it up and made it much stronger. So therefore, we can patter the guy who was blowing because he didn't intend, but because the fact of the matter is his blowing didn't really accomplish anything. Because on the contrary, his blowing might well have put out the fire. Tosfos gives a different explanation, that it's not the normal way, as you blow from the same direction as the wind, and therefore even if it happens, Tosfos says that the wind were to help him and blow from the same direction, he might not have realized that's going to happen. And therefore, he should have to be careful. That follows the Ri's explanation in the previous Tosfos that was saying that the Mishnah was talking about where it was a normal wind that blew it up. So here we're talking about it was a normal wind plus his blowing, but the fact is he didn't realize that they're both going to end up blowing in the same direction. But then Tosfos is saying the other possibility would be that they were actually blowing, like Rashi says, in opposite directions, and the point is he himself blowing on it would have weakened the fire, and the wind came and strengthened. Anyway, that's Abaye's answer. Rava Amak, Gunshul Liba Beruach Mitsuya, Vili Batua Ruach Beruach Shaina Mitsuya. Rava gives a different answer. That the Braise is talking about, he blew it with a normal wind. In other words, he blew it to the extent that when the wind was blowing normally, so therefore his blowing wasn't strong enough together with the normal wind at that time to cause the fire to spread. Then all of a sudden, then a stronger than normal wind came, where again, that's something unexpected, and therefore you can patter him for it. So with Shabbos, Rashi points out, a Ruach Mitzuya would be quite enough to accomplish what he needs, therefore you can be mechayev him for doing it together with the Ruach Mitzuya, because that's exactly what he intended to do. But here, when all of a sudden a Ruach She'ena Mitzuya came, Then in connection with Shabbos, he would be chayev, because a Ruach Mitzuya would have been enough. But here, a Ruach Mitzuya would not have been enough, because we're talking about that his blowing was not strong enough for that purpose. And therefore, we can patter him on that ground. Tosfos teaches out, in other words, if his blowing together with a Ruach Mitzuya would have been enough to make the fire spread, then we consider it as though he did everything by himself. If only a Ruach She'ena Mitzuya would do it, then it makes him potter, because again, he couldn't have expected that there was going to be such a strong wind. So that's another answer. Reb Zera Omkagen Tzamra Tzamuri. Reb Zera gives another answer, that he blew hot on it. Both Rashi and Tosfos refer to that consider, for example, the way a person blows on their hands in the winter to warm them up. You don't purse your lips. And when we're talking about blowing on a flame up until now, we're talking about that you purse your lips and you blow a stream of cold air on it, and that whips up the fire. But what do you do when you want to warm up your hands? You open your mouth and you blow gently on it. So here, Reb Zera says, that's what we're talking about. Why is he potter over here? Because he blew in that way on it. So therefore, that's not libui at all. So now we're saying, if that all alone would have been enough to make the fire spread, fine, then you chayev. But like this, normally that doesn't do that. Normally it takes a combination of the wind to do that. The fact is, the way he's blowing on it is not the normal kind of blowing on a flame, and therefore, even if it joined together with the wind, then in fact, Tosfos says they might even counteract each other. One's hot air, and the other is cold air. When you blow, the kind of blowing on your hands to warm them up is hot air. The wind is blowing cold air, so therefore they might even counteract each other. So even though it was a Ruach Mitzuya and the combination of them caused the fire to spread, nevertheless, you'd be potter, because you couldn't have expected that you're blowing the hot air on it together with the wind is going to cause it to spread. Abba, you would expect the other way around. The Shittim Kubetzes brings from the Ra'ah a different explanation of Tzamrat Samuri. It was regular blowing, but it was the kind of blowing not to make the fire any bigger, just to keep it from going out. So he did that, and then so Zera is saying that now, so he, the fact is, he's not really doing anything to cause the fire to spread any further. Then a wind comes and causes it to spread. Fine, but you can't hold him responsible because he wasn't, with his blowing, making the fire any bigger. He was just preserving it as it is. The word samra, by the way, in Aramaic, it comes from a word that means hot. That's why, according to Rashi and Tosfos, we're talking about blowing hot on it, and according to the Ra'ah, we're talking about keeping it as hot as it was, but not spreading it any further.
We don't see over here the concept of two people doing something together.
Well, here it's not shnayim, and here it's him plus the wind. The right. Wind is bidei shemayim, but that's what we're asking in the first place. When it comes to the mlocha of zoda, a person is chayiv, even though the wind helped him out. Why over here? We're saying that if he blew on it and the wind blew on it, he should be potter. That's what we have, the three answers so far. Rav Ashi Yomar. So Abaye had said the answer is that they blew in different directions. So therefore they would have counteracted each other. Rava is saying that his blowing wouldn't have been enough to cause it to spread Beruach Metzuya, but then a Ruach She'ena Metzuya, an unusually strong wind, came and whipped it up. And Reb Zera is saying that he didn't blow on it in the normal way, Bechlal. He just blew hot air on it the way that a person does. That's pointed to the Ra'ah, is to maintain it. According to Rashi and Tosfos, you don't need that. Rather, it just means he blew on it the way that a person blows on his hands to warm him up, where he keeps his mouth open and blows hot air.
That kept it alive.
So apparently it kept it alive, but the point is, so Rashi is saying that that's not considered libui at all. Libui, to fan a flame, would be where you blow a stream of air on it, not when you give a puff of air on it like you do to warm up your hands. The Raivad gives yet another explanation that Samrat Samuri means that, for example, he fanned it with his clothing or with a keli. That's not the normal way of fanning a flame. Pashtus, I guess the Raivad would say, if he used something that's normally meant for that purpose, like a fan, then of course he'd be chayev. But we're talking about, let's say, for example, I don't know, he takes a corner of his garment and starts waving it at it. That's not really libui. Anyway, that's Rav Zera's answer. Rav Ashi says, here's a fourth answer. You're comparing Zoda to our case over here. Actually, there's a big difference, says Rav Ashi. You know, when we say that if a person is winnowing the grain and the wind helps him out, that he's chayev hanimilin in Shabbos. That's only when it comes to Shabbos, the melachas machshavas, osra Torah, because the Torah asks a person to do a premeditated melacha, a melacha that he planned to do, and he actually accomplished it. He wanted to do Zoda, and he accomplished Zoda. He wants the wind to help him out. Avalhocha groma ba'almahu. But here, Rav Ashi is arguing when the wind helps whip up the flame, then it's only he himself is only a groma b'nizakin potter, and then we know that a person is potter for groma when it comes to nizakin. So therefore, even if it was a ruach metzuya and all that, nevertheless he would be potter because then it comes out he didn't do the malacha by himself. So by Shabbos, the Torah doesn't care about that as long as it was malachas machshavas. But here it has to be that he did something that all by itself would cause nezek, and like this, he didn't do that.
Only the wind that came, right.
A couple of points in that regard. Tosfos mentions over here that we're going to have, in a few months from now in Baba Basra, Beis Hashem, we're going to talk about all kinds of cases where a person has to keep a nezek far away from somebody else's property so that it doesn't go and cause hezek, and we don't use groma over there. So Tosfos is saying, because over here, the groma is basically the making the fire. So here the groma is the fact that he made the fire in the first place, and here when he made the fire, it wasn't big enough to cause damage. So then, as opposed to those other cases in Baba Basra, where he's doing it close enough to the other guy's property that the effects of it will spread. Now, you mentioned also of two people, you mentioned also as far as Shabbos, Shnayim, Shasa, or Turim. So Tosfos also does mention over here, it comes out, according to Rav Ashi, if two people are blowing on it, and neither one was blowing strongly enough to cause it to spread, only the combination, then we would say that they don't combine together. But Tosfos says it's a Dvar Tema. It's strange to say that, but that seems to be the conclusion from the Gemara. And in fact, the Mordechai Paskins that way, and the Ramah brings that Lahalacha. So yes, we would, the same way as by Shabbos, we say Shnayim Shasur Upturim. Similarly, we would say over here that if two people together are blowing on it, and we figure out, and Beistin figures out, that neither one was blowing strongly enough that they would by themselves have caused the fire to spread, then nevertheless, that would be the halacha that the Tosfos is saying, the Temahu. It's strange to say that, but nevertheless, that is how it's Paskin halacha.
So
it would be considered like Shnayim Shasur, uh-huh. And both of them would be Potter, yeah.
Even though
together they actually accomplished it, yeah.
Taking a jacket and blowing on it, that would be considered the...
So I guess it depends. When we said before, according to the Raibid, we're talking about using a keli, we're talking about, obviously, it depends what kind of keli. Again, if we're talking about a fan or something like that, which is normal to use for this purpose, then, of course, you could be mechayev in it. Okay. Mishnah says, Hashaleach HaSabe'era, if a person lets loose a fire, so shaleach can mean that he actually sent it with a cheresh shirt of a cotton, like in the previous Mishnah, or it can mean that he partially let it loose, in other words, that he didn't take care to control the fire, whatever the case, but ochla eitzim, and it consumed somebody else's wood, oyavonim, or stones. Now, stones don't burn, but as we learned in the beginning of the Masechta, you could still have, they get singed, they get charred, the outside of them is black, and you can't use them for building stones now, so that's a damage. Oy offer, or it damaged the dirt, meaning also, as we learned over there, you can have a person had a newly plowed field, and now the fire goes and then spreads across the field. It burns the top layer of topsoil. Now he has to go and plow again to get good fertile soil on top. So chayev, then in all those cases, is going to be chayev. Shenema, as the pasuk says, ki seitzei esh, if a fire spreads, u'motza koitzim, and it finds thorns, v'necho godish, and a stack of grain gets burnt, oy hakoma, or standing grain that's still attached to the ground, oy hasoda, or field, which means the field itself, shalom yishalom, amavera sabera, then the one who caused the fire is going to be chayim. So, Omar Rabba, lomali de kosir rachmana kotsim godish koma v'soda. Now the pasuk is mentioning four things over here: that the fire first burnt some thorns. Then we said that it burnt his stack of grain, his standing grain, or his field. The implication is we don't just mean that the thorns are just what helped the fire spread. The point is the one who's caused the fire is going to be chayev for paying for the other guy's thorns. If the guy wanted to use the thorns for some purpose, he could have used it for firewood. The Gemara mentions in Shabbos that camels eat thorns, so if the guy happens to have camels, then he could have fed them to them, whatever. Why does the pasuk need to mention all those four things? So Rava says, tzrichim, we need all of them. De'i kosir rachmana kotzim, if the Torah had only written about the thorns, haba amina, you would have thought, you know what, kotzim u'dechiv rachmana, you know why the Torah is machayev Ruven for his fire burning Shimon's thorns, mishum deshchiach eshkabayu, because it's very common for fire to spread to them. Rashi points out people are not usually careful with them. After all, mostly thorns are going to be used for firewood. So therefore, so you could say, they're laying around, right? Veshchiach deposha. So therefore, it's very common that. That the one who set the fire, he figured, well, there's just thorns around here, big deal, they'll get burned. So therefore, you can be mechayev him for that. Avo godish, but when it comes to a stack of grain, delosh shchiach eshkabayu, you don't usually have fire anywhere near there, velosh shchiach deposha, so it's not that common that a person is going to be careless with it in the first place. Emaloi, you would think maybe not, maybe that should be considered an oinus. He didn't intend for the fire. We're not talking about over here where he goes deliberately sets fire to the other guy's stack of grain or whatever. We're talking about he had a fire in his rishus and it got out of control and spread. So you could say, I wouldn't have burned down your stack of grain, and it's not something I would have been more careful with it. And the fact that it got out of my control, therefore maybe you should potter him for it. Therefore, the pasuk needs to mention the stack of grain. The ikos of Rahman Godish, on the other hand, if the Torah had only written the stack of grain, have amin a Godish chayev, chayev Rahman, mishum de hefsid merubu. You know what? On the other hand, you have a stack of grain being burnt is a huge hefsid. It's a lot of money. It might be the entire crop of the other guy for the entire year or something. Avakotzim de hefsid what? But thorns, they're worth next to nothing anyway. Amaloi, maybe you would say that he's potter. Therefore, the Torah needed to write both kotzim and Godish. Then continues Rava Kamalamali. Now, why does the pasuk then also need to mention the standing grain? That's not meant to teach us a big hezek or a small hezek, because we know that already, whether we're talking a big hezek or a small one, and whether we're talking about something that commonly gets burnt or something that does not, we've already covered that. So koma, rather to teach, comes to teach us ma koma begolui af kol begolui, the same way as a stand of grain is open to the elements. You don't cover up your grain when it's growing. You need it to be open to the air and to the sun. The same way, when you chayev for fire, only things that are uncovered, as we've touched on before, and as we're going to talk over the next couple of days, Be'ez Hashem, you potter for tamun, when you have things that are hidden inside the stack of grain or inside whatever, then you potter for the burning of those. Like we learned before, yeah, we had at the beginning of the parak, for example, where a person sees a fire is spreading near his neighbor's field, and he goes and covers it with blankets and now makes it tamun. We had earlier in the Masechta, we had other examples of this kind of thing as well. So we learn that from Kama, because it means, in other words, the Torah is telling us, whatever it is that gets burnt has to be similar in that regard to Kama. Well, the question is, well, what about according to Rabbi Yehuda? He says a person is chayev for tamun that gets burnt by fire. And he's going to learn it later on from Psukim as well. Kama lomali. So according to him, what is the word Kama coming to teach us? And the answer is, he would say, the rabbis call balei koma. It comes to include anything that has a height. So Rashi says that means including animals and including trees. So far, we haven't mentioned trees. How do you know that if your fire burns down somebody else's tree, you're chayev? How do we know? You had a case that we talked about earlier in the Masechta, for example, where you have a stack of grain, pile of grain, and you have tied up to it is a goat. And when the grain gets burnt, the goat gets burnt also. So how do we know you'd be chayev for that? It doesn't mention either of those in the pasuk. We learn that Rabbi Yehuda would say from the word kum. The point is, the Ravid points out, it means, in other words, like this, without the word comma, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you might have thought only the kind of things that become a goddish, where you normally make a pile of them, then those you'd be chayav for. Let's say, for example, vegetables. When you harvest vegetables, you don't make a pile of them like you do with grain. You wouldn't know that you're chayav. Therefore, the Balei Koima is including those as well. The Rashba points out, really, it means everything. Everything has a height. I mean, the height may just be a fraction of an inch or something, but even the smallest thing has a height. And therefore, Balei Koima would include anything, small or large, that gets damaged by that fire. Then the one who started the fire is going to be chayav for it. Okay, so that's what we learned from Koma. What about, the question is, what about, according to the Chachamim, since they hold that we're using Kama to teach us about that Tamun, that things that are hidden up potter, so where are they learning Balei Koima? The answer is, they say, because the Torah says, or the Kama. So the word oi teaches us something extra. Rabbi Yehuda, what does Rabbi Yehuda answer that? He says, oi, mebar le lechalik. He says, as we learned earlier, that the word oi is needed in order to distinguish. Without that, if the Torah had said, v'necho godish v'hakoma v'hasada, or something like that, you would have thought only if the pile of grain and the standing grain and the field are burnt, only then is he chayev, so you need oi to tell us it's one or the other. We discussed a few days ago, there was a Tosfos that mentioned in a machlokas between Rav Yoshia and Rav Yonason, whether b'chlal in the Torah, do we need oi to mean or does a vav by itself mean or? So Tosfos had said over there, this Gemara might be according to only one of those opinions. And then we said, on the other hand, there could be, we learned, for example, when it came to Shur v'chamur, we said there might be a reason, some Rishonim, we said, had said there might be a reason given that it's, you have Shur v'chamur when it comes to pulling a wagon together, maybe over here, you need it to specifically say oi to tell us not so. So the same way over here, maybe they would say that they would say, that even according to Rabbi Yonason, Rabbi Yehuda could say that there's a reason why you need the oil over here. Okay. V'rabbanan l'chalek min alahu. Where do the Chachamim learn that concept that it's one or the other? So nafkaluhume oy hasada. They say because the pasuk says, the pasuk continues, or the field. So once you have an or over there, then it means that each thing the pasuk is mentioning is distinct from the other. V'Rabbi Yehuda, what does Rabbi Yehuda answer to that? He says you can't learn anything from that oy. I did the kasa rachmana oy hakama kasa oy hasada. Once it says oy in connection with comma, then it says in connection with sada, but not that we're meant to learn anything specific from that second one. Okay, so that covers so far why the pasuk can mention thorns and a pile of grain and the standing grain. What's left is hasada, is the field. So sada lamali, why does the pasuk need to mention the field? That would be last suya, lichacha nira v'sichacha avanu. That would include, like we said in the Mishnah, where the fire licked up across his plowed field, and now he has to re-plow to get good topsoil on top, or where it singed his stones, and now those stones can't be used for building stones anymore. So that we learn from the word sada. Well, the question is, so in that case, based on what we said so far, the Torah could have just written sada, and we would have learned everything else from it. So why does it need to mention the thorns and the pile of grain and the standing grain? And the answer is tzricha. After all, you need that. The ikos rachmana sada. On the other hand, if the Torah had written only sada, habamina mashava sada ain. Maybe only a chayev for the fire burning something in the field, midi achrin aloy, but maybe if it burns any place else, you'd be potter. So therefore, the pasuk is telling you that no, you are chayev for things even that are not in the field. Not necessarily. A godish is not necessarily in the field, but that's the point is, in other words, you would have thought that maybe, for example, only no. So mashav asada means you would think, Rashi says, sorry, I said it wrong. Mashav asada, you would think only yuchayev for the grain that was, in other words, without having, like this, if the pasuk had only said that the fire burnt asada, you wouldn't understand it to mean, like we just said, that it meant the actual ground of the asada or the actual rocks of the asada. You would think it means the contents of the field, mainly the grain. You wouldn't know then that it means the grain. Once it says hakoma, which means the grain that's standing there in the field, now we can understand that hasada means the actual ground itself. Okay. Now the Gemara brings in a piece of agadah on this subject. Amar b'shim b'nachmeni, amar b'yonis, amar b'shmur b'nachmeni, amar b'yonisin, ein pur'onus ba'la olam, ela b'zman sho reshoyim ba'olam. When does punishment come to the world? Only when there are reshoyim in the world. So the punishment comes because of the reshoyim. But when the punishment begins, it begins with the tzaddikim first. And we see that from the pasuk that we were just quoting. When a fire spreads and it finds thorns, we can daushen it. When does a fire, a punishment from Hashem, come out? And Maharsha explains at the beginning of the Masechta that we're comparing the punishment of Hashem to fire in the sense, out of all the Ovis Nezikin, fire is the most destructive. For that reason, it's often used as a metaphor for Hashem's punishments, which if Hashem doesn't have Rachmanus, then they'll completely destroy. So when the fire spreads and umotza koitzim, it finds thorns, meaning emasai esh yotza, when does a fire start coming out from Hashem, bizman shekoitzim metzuin la, when there are thorns, the reshoim are compared to thorns, when they're around and they're in the world, Ben Yoyada points out the point of in the world, meaning in other words, they're actually there doing the Averis right now. In other words, Hashem is not going to do this because there were reshoim in the past, and Hashem is punishing for what they did in the past. We're talking about they're right now in the world and doing what they're doing, and therefore, they cause puranas. But then the pasuk is implying that the punishment begins first with the tzaddikim for reasons that we're going to explain in a couple of lines. Shenema v'necho godish, because the pasuk continues that the pile of grain is burnt. The tzaddikim are compared to a pile of grain in the sense, unlike thorns, which are basically useless, the pile of grain is very valuable. In fact, it'll produce new grain later on, the same way as tzaddikim keep on producing new peiros in the world.
How does the godish make more new?
Because after all, you take the seed from it and you plant them and you have new grain. So now for ochal godish lenema. Now the pasuk doesn't say it will consume the godish, which will imply that first the fire burns the thorns and then it spreads to the godish. Rather, elav v'nechal godish. V'nechal is in past tense. Shenechal godish kvar. So the pasuk is hinting at the pile of grain has already been burnt by the time it reaches the thorns. Meaning, in other words, that the puranis first hits the tzaddikim and then the rishonim. For one thing, because they should have been Moicha, but we're going to see in a second another reason why. So Tony Rav Yosef in this connection taught a Braisa. My dichtiv, what does it mean by Makas Bechoros? Hashem tells Moshe to tell the Jewish people, Va'atam loisetsu ishmi pesach beisei ad boker, nobody should go out from their houses until the morning. That means, why shouldn't they go out until the morning? Kivin shenitin reshus l'mashchis, once the destroyer has been given permission to destroy, einem mavchin ben tzaddikim l'rishoyim. He won't distinguish between tzaddikim and rishoyim. So since the mashchis is out and about on that night, then therefore any yid who would be outdoors is in danger of being caught by him as well. Now the question becomes, I mean, on that night we say anivel malach, anivel sorof, etc. So what mashkis are we talking about anyway? So there's a few different answers. Among them is we can be talking about before chatzos versus afterwards. There was Rashi mentions on the pasuk actually that nighttime is a time when machablin, when destructive forces prowl around. That Ramban says, so what does that mean? Any night a person is not allowed to go outdoors? Obviously not. There was a special thing because makas b'choras. But there is the point. In other words, Marsha is saying there is both. The fact is, makas b'choras happened at one moment at chatzos. So why shouldn't they be able to go out after that? Because nevertheless, night is a time when mashchisim roam around. The Pnei Yeshua talks about over here an idea that, after all, we know Makas Bechoros itself happened directly through Hashem, Anivale Malach, Anivale Saraf, but nevertheless, there are other destructive Malachim that roam around other nights, like Rashi is saying, and that night also. And yeah, Poshet, you have people whose time is up. You have regular people whose time is up, and then the Malach HaMavis is going to go and take them. So now Moshe is warning the Jewish people to stay indoors that night, so you don't get caught up in the ones that the regular mashkis would be taking. In fact, there's a vote on that says that was the chiddush when the Mitzrayim found by them in Bayis Hashem in Shomeis. On the other hand, by the Jews, there wasn't one dead. Means that Hashem protected even the ones who normally it would have been b'derech hateva in a nation of several million Jewish people. B'derech hateva, there would have been some people whose time is up that night, but Hashem protected them that it wouldn't happen. So the Mitzrayim don't think that Jews are being hit by makas b'choras as well. Anyway, then Reb Yosef continues. Veloy oid. Not only that, when there's a plague or whatever going on, and tzaddikim and rishoyim are being hit, and we're saying the mashkis, the destroyer, doesn't notice the difference. Veloy oid el shemaskim and tzaddikim tchila. Not only that, he begins with the tzaddikim first. Shenemer, as we find a pasuk in Yechezkel, veichrati mimech tzaddik v'rosha. Hashem says, I will cut off from among you tzaddik and rosha. So the tzaddik is mentioned first, implying that the tzaddik is the one who actually gets hit first. Sfarim do talk about the idea. There is a difference in this regard between different degrees of tzaddikim. You know, we have these days in Tanya where the Alter Rebbe was talking about tzaddik gomer, tzaddik she'enik gomer. So here we're talking about, first of all, I mean, obviously many times a tzaddik means what people usually think of a tzaddik, was 51% or more mitzvahs. But he has what the mashkas to accuse him for. But even at tzaddik she'enik gomer, as the Alter Rebbe is saying, he has a vestige of ra in him, and therefore that's reason that the mashkas might be able to get him. At tzaddik gomer, maybe not necessarily. Anyway, so then Bochi Rabbi Yosef, when he was learning that, was crying. What does that mean? It's bad enough that the tzaddikim get punished, but are the tzaddikim considered like nothing, that they should have to be, that they should be punished first before the rishoyim even? What's the logic? The answer is, it's actually meant as a good thing for the tzaddikim. The pasuk says the tzaddik is gathered in the face of the evil, meaning, in other words, before the evil happens, before the punishment happens, Hashem causes that the tzaddik passes away, and therefore he won't have to see the puranus. So therefore Hashem takes him away first, so he doesn't have to experience all of that terrible thing.
seeing
Ace. Like Avraham not seeing Ace of becoming a Rasha would be one example. Yeah. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav's. Furthermore, Rav Yehuda says in the name of Rav in this connection, also something that we learned from Makkas Bechoras, La'olam yikonis adam b'chitoiv v'yetzi b'chitoiv. A person should always go, a person should always come into the city during kitoiv while the sun is shining, rather than waiting till it's dark. The yetzi, and when he leaves the city, he should leave b'chitoiv when it's light outside. Shenema, we find the same thing where Moshe is telling the Jewish people, "Va'atam loseitzu ish mipesach beisa ad boker." Don't anybody go outdoors until the morning, because again, nighttime is the time for mazikim. Tosfos points out, it's not just a matter of mazikim and also robbers. Tosfos points out there's another consideration as well, which is that you have, for example, the you have pits and potholes and things in the road. So if it's your native city, then you're familiar with those kinds of obstacles. But if it's a different city, then not. Tosfos says that's why it first mentions Yikones. Because why? If you're talking about leaving your city, it should say Yetze first. You leave your city before you come to another city. We're talking about over here, you're traveling to a different city. So therefore, so you're in an unfamiliar territory. Therefore, you konis, make sure to come into this unfamiliar city, b'kitoiv, so you'll be able to see any obstacles on the road, v'yetze b'kitoiv. And then when you're leaving the next morning, also leave only when it's kitoiv, only when it's light outside. We find that Yosef sent his brothers away only Haboker Ur. The Medrash tells a story in that connection involving the mayor, where there was this. The Medrash tells a story. There was this innkeeper who had a tricky thing going on with a group of nearby robbers. He would have his guests leave the. He would tell his guests who were staying over by him, "You know what? Why don't we leave in the middle of the night? You'll get a head start on your journey." Then they would. Robbers would fall on them, and then later on the innkeeper would split the loot with them. So then when the mayor comes, he's wise to what this guy is doing. And when the guy comes in the middle of the night to tell him, the mayor says, "I'm waiting for my brother." "What's your brother's name?" "Kitoiv." "Where am I going to find him?" "In shul." The guy goes, starts yelling by the shul, "Kitoiv, your brother, the mayor, is waiting for you." Nothing doing. Finally comes the morning, and he realizes, obviously, it's not going to work. You can't take guests by robbers at that time. They'll realize what's going on. So he says to the mayor, "I never found your brother." The mayor says, "He's right here." So yeah. Continuing on the subject of what to do in times of danger, we were saying that by Makkas Bechoras they had to stay indoors. So here's another thing we learned from this. Tonan Abanan, Dever Bu'ir, if there's a plague, if there's an epidemic in the city, Kanes Reglecha, keep your feet inside. In other words, stay inside your house, don't go outdoors. Marsha points out, by the way, it doesn't mean you shouldn't leave the city. If you can leave the city to get away from the epidemic, so much the better. What it means is, at least if you can't leave the city for whatever reason, then at least what you should do is quarantine yourself indoors rather than lockdown during literally. Shenema va'atam loseitzu ish mipesach beisa ad boker, as we find over here where it was saying that nobody should go out of the door of their house until morning. Va'omer, and in fact you have another pasuk that expresses this idea. And the pasuk says, the Navi warns the Jewish people, "Leich ami, go my people, boy b'chaderecha, go into your rooms, usgod losecha badcha, and close and shut your doors behind you." And the pasuk continues, "Ad yavar zam, until the anger goes away," which refers to the epidemic. So therefore, in other words, so it's saying that you should hide indoors. Va'omer, and you have yet another pasuk, "Michutz teshako chereb," on the outside the house, the sword is killing and bereaving people, "Umechadorim ema," and on the inside the houses, there is fear. So when you have, in other words, so we're darshaning, when the fear of the Malach HaMavis, we don't mean the sword of enemies of enemies or whatever, we mean the sword of the Malach HaMavis, when it's raging outside, then be afraid indoors. But don't go outdoors. Now, why do we need three psukim? So the Gemara says, "My v'omer." So because like this, because from the pasuk by Makkas Bechoras, you would have said, "Hani mili b'leilya." You know what? That applies only by night, which is when Makkas Bechoras took place. "Avo b'yamamaloi." Where do we know that the same thing would apply if there's an epidemic by day? Toshma leichami boy b'chaderecha skod losecha, where we have that pasuk is referring to the daytime as well, because it doesn't say one way or the other. And v'chitema hanimili hecha deleka ema migavoi. Now you might say that's only where you don't have further fear indoors. But if you're going to be afraid indoors as well, on the contrary, you could argue, wouldn't it be better to go and at least be able to be together with other people and keep each other company and then and help calm each other down? Toshma, therefore, bring the third pasuk. Even if a person has reason to be afraid indoors, nevertheless, michutz shako cherev, the sword of the Malach HaMavis is only killing outdoors, so therefore it's better to stay indoors. And in this connection, the Gemara says, Rava be'idan riska, Rava, when there was a time of anger of Hashem, for example, or when there was a plague, have a socher kavi, he would close the windows of his house. Now, you have to remember, windows in those times were not normally glazed. They were normally open holes in the wall. So here, he would put up his shutters or whatever. He'd put something to block the windows. Shenemar, dichtiv, as it says in the pasuk, ki olam mavis b'chaleinenu, as the pasuk says, we have it in Haftarah of Tisha B'Av morning, death has come up in all windows. So he understood, in other words, that the windows are a way in which the death and the disease could come in, and therefore he better keep his windows closed. Yeah. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Tanan Abanan, Ra'av Ba'ir, what happens now, before we were talking about when there's an epidemic in the city, so then we said, Kanes Reglecha, then keep your feet indoors, meaning, in other words, as Marasha said, if you have an opportunity to escape from the city, then Gesunta, hey, do that, but if you can't, then stay indoors rather than stay indoors. Now, on the other hand, the Braisa says, Ra'av Ba'ir, if there's a famine in the city, Pazir aglacha, then scatter your feet. In other words, go travel to go and find food rather than staying put. Shenema, as we find, by Hirav Ba'aretz, there was a famine in Eretz Yisrael, by Yered Avram Mitzrayma, Logur Shom, is how it says in the Pasuk. Avram went down there to sojourn in Mitzrayim. So therefore we see, so Avram didn't stay put in Eretz Yisrael, he left for Mitzrayim, so therefore we see that the proper thing to do at a time of famine.
Logur means temporary, right?
Logur means temporary, right. Mind you, by the way, that Amban on the Pasuk actually says that Avraham didn't do right by that. He should have trusted in Hashem and stayed in Eretz Yisrael, so that Amban might learn that our Gemara is disagreeing with that. Or we might say there might be a difference between different degrees of famine. Maybe there wasn't such a severe famine that would force him right away to go down to Eretz Mitzrayim, but anyway. Va'omer, and we have another example when it comes to the famous story of the Arba'a Anashim Mitzorayim, which is the Haftarah of Parshas Mitzora, where we have so what happens? They're outside the city, and meanwhile there's a siege from Aram, and there's a famine inside the city, and they're saying, if we were to figure we should go into the city, there's a famine in the city, then we're going to die over there. And on the other hand, they continue, if we go to Machne Aram, they might kill us over there. So we see that and what do they do in the end? They go to Machne Aram and then they find it abandoned, etc. But anyway, the point is, so we see over there also that they figured rather than going into the city, they're better off going out, they're better off going further out. So again, the Gemara says, Ma'iva Omer, why do we need a second pasuk to prove the point? Because you could argue in Avraham's case, there's no suffix nefashis going someplace else. Yes, when they come to Mitzrayim, you have the danger of Atzara over there, but in and of itself, going to Mitzrayim is not an inherently dangerous place. Aval hecha de'ika suffix nefashis loy, but maybe with the suffix of sakonis nefashis, maybe he shouldn't go someplace else. Toshma, therefore we have the proof from the Abba Mitzrayim, where they're saying, what do they do in the end? L'chuv and nipla machne Aram, we're going to go and surrender ourselves to the camp of Aram, and if they let us live, then we'll live. And if not, then they'll kill us. Meaning, in other words, that they're willing to take that risk. That they're willing to take that risk. So we see even where there's a suffix sakonas nefashis, then a person should do that. And Pnei Yeshua points out, when you get down to it, I mean, isn't the concern that they might be taken as prisoners and they might be sold as slaves or something? And the Gemara tells us in Bava Basra that that's even worse than famine. But the answer is, listen, they were Mitzrayim. Nobody's going to want them as slaves anyhow. So the question is either, are they going to be killed on the spot, or are the Aramim going to have Rachmanos on them? So they're saying they're willing to take that risk. And so we see, in other words, that even because there was a danger of hunger. And Marshall points out, though, the fact remains that inside the city itself, it wasn't definite that they were going to die either. There is Marashah points out, I mean, after all, okay, so if you have Suffolk Nefoshis and you have Vaday inside the city, of course they need to go. And the answer is because they're not saying we're definitely going to die in the city. They're saying it's Korev Levaday. There's a terrible famine in the city. The Pesukim before that described people were reduced to eating garbage, but nevertheless, it's not a certainty that they're going to die in the city. So that's the point, because they're saying that's the point. We can learn from that, therefore, that the better thing to do is Pazard Aglecha, go further afield and see what you can find in the way of food, which is why instead of going into the city, where they have a Suffolk over there as well, instead they went to Machne Aram. Aye, there's a Suffolk over there, but nevertheless, they're taking their chance. Yeah. Okay, continues the Gemara. Tonan Abonon, Dever Ba'ir. When there's a plague going on in the city, al yahalach odem be'emtsa derech, a person should not walk in the middle of the street. In those times, the way it usually worked was the middle of the street was where most people walked. You had the sides of an area, the sides would be like for people who have to stay away from everybody else. You find, for example, a Mishnah in Shkolim that mentions that throughout the year, the tmeim, there's more tmeim than tahorim, because to be tahor, after all, you have to go to the mikveh, you need to be sprinkled with par adruma water, the amei oretz abcheskos tomei or whatever. So most of the year, the tmeim would walk in the middle of the street, and the tahorim would walk by the sides. And then during the yom tovim, it's the other way around, because chayiv adam tahor atzma beregel. Therefore, it's the other way around. The few tmeim would stay on the sides of the street, and the tahorim would walk in the middle. So here we're saying that during the time of plague, a person should not be walking in the middle of the road, because the Malach HaMavis is walking down the middle of the street. Like it's his time to shine right now, and therefore like he walks around as if he owns the place. The point is, once he's been given Rishus to kill people, muscular head, yeah, then he walks very openly over there, unlike normal times when he's just skulking along the sides of the road. Sholem Ba'ir, and then on the other hand, when it's a peaceful time in the city, al yahalach, but sidei derachim, then a person shouldn't walk by the sides of the road, dekiven to lesley reshusa, because now at a time like that, the Malach HaMavis has no particular permission to kill, so therefore, chabuye, therefore he hides himself and skulks along the sides over there. Now the Taz brings from the Yam Shal Shloima, by day b'chlam mazikim are not common, therefore by day there's no problem in a time of Shalom in walking on the sides of the streets, which explains what we were saying before, that the Tmeim versus the Tehodim the rest of the year versus Yom Tov would walk on the sides of the streets, because that's talking about during the day. But we're saying over here that by night is when the Malach HaMavis is skulking along the sides of an area, and therefore you have to be careful about that. Continues the Gemara, Tanan Rabbanan, Dever Ba'ir, when there's a plague in the city, Al Yukonis Adam Yochad Leves HaKnesses, a person shouldn't go alone into Shul, Shem Malach HaMavis Mafkid Shem Kelov, because the Malach HaMavis deposits his weapons over there. However, the Gemara says, "V'hani mili heich b'le koru be'daudiki b'le matzlo be'asara." That is only in a shul where children don't learn in cheder, and where you don't have a minion of 10 to daven over there. When you do, then that counteracts the Malach HaMavis. But when you have an abandoned shul, it's not being used to teach kids Torah, and it's not being used for a minion, then the Malach HaMavis Adarava finds that a very congenial place to store his weapons. Continues the Gemara, Tanan Rabbanan, Klovim Bochim, when the dogs in town are crying, Malach HaMavis Bala'ir, then it's a sign that the Malach HaMavis has come to the city. Klovim Mesachim, and when dogs are laughing, Elio Anovi Bala'ir, then it shows that Elio Anovi has come to town. The point is, in other words, Hashem put it in the nature of the dog to recognize such things. That way, we ourselves can recognize it through the behavior of the dogs. This is the Tartus Chaim says this, and this way, a person realizes what steps to take. There's the idea, in other words, that Hashem gave animals a certain ability to be able to recognize ruchniistic phenomena that human beings can't. We have, for example, with Bilam and the Malach, where Bilam didn't see the Malach until Hashem made him able to. Vayiftach Hashem es ene Bilam, and before that he didn't, as Rashi says on the Pasuk, the animals saw it all along, because animals don't have das, they won't be terrified out of their wits by seeing a Malach, whereas a person would, and therefore Hashem doesn't allow people normally to see such things. So therefore, Hashem put it in the nature of the dogs to be able to see such things. So Ben Yehoyada says a kind of a gleich vertel on it. He says the vote is the Malacham, when the Malacham Avos is in town, we said everybody is closing themselves up in their houses. So therefore, the dogs are crying because nobody's feeding them. There's no scraps that they're throwing out for the dogs because they're not making any big parties or whatever, as opposed to when Eliyahu Navi is coming to town. When does he come? On a day of Bris Milah. So now when there's lots of sudas for Bris Milah, people are leaving scraps for the dogs. So then therefore, so the dogs are very happy because they're going to have what to eat. In this connection, by the way, it's brought that when it says by Makas Bechoris that Lo Yechatz Kelav L'Shoyne, part of the chiddush of it was exactly that. We're saying when the Malacham Avos is in town, the dogs are screaming and crying, and here you would expect that they're going to be screaming out against some Jews, but nevertheless, Hashem is saying, but Derech Nes, it's not going to happen. So all of this was kind of a digression from we were talking about fire in terms of Puranus min Hashemayim, and that led us into this discussion about different kinds of punishments min Hashemayim. So now the Gemara continues, getting back to the matter of fire. Yosef, Rab Ami, Rab Asi, Kamed, Rab Yitzchak Napfa. Rab Ami and Rab Asi were one time sitting as Talmidim in front of Rab Yitzchak Napfa. Mar Omalei Lema Mar Shmaitza. One of them was saying that the Rebbe teach us a teaching in Torah and Halacha. Omar Omalei Lema Mar Agadda. And the other one was saying, Rebbe teach us something about Agadda. Pasach Lemeimer Agadda. So Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha was going to say something of Agadda. V'lo Shavik Mar. But the other one who said, I want Halacha, wasn't letting him speak. Pasach Lemeimer Shmaitza. He wants to say a thing of Halacha. V'lo Shavik Mar. And the other Talmud wouldn't let him because he wants to hear Divrei Agadda. So they're arguing between themselves which it's going to be, and they can't agree among themselves. And the result is that nothing's getting accomplished. What the reason for their argument was? So Ben Yehoyada talks about that like this. After all, you have to learn b'simcha, so we need Agadda first, like you have when we find that Rabbah would tell us Talmudim a joke. And the other one said, on the other hand, we can be happy with learning Torah itself. We don't need Agadda first. So anyway, the point is they were arguing and nothing was going on. Omalahem, so Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha tells them, let me tell you what this is like. Imagine you have a man who has two wives, Achas Yalda v'Achas Skena. One is a young woman and one is an old one. So the younger wife, whenever she sees white hairs on him, she picks him out because she doesn't want her husband to look old. On the other hand, the old wife wants him to look old like her. So every time she sees a black hair of his, she pulls it out. So between the two of them, he winds up bald. This became a popular expression, like when a person ends up stuck between two extremes. So it comes from Argamon. Anyway, so the same way, he's telling them, you know what? I mean, what are we going to do over here? One of you wants halacha, one of you wants agadda. You're not letting each other have their way. So what are we going to do? So let me tell you something that'll work for both of you. I'll tell you a halacha. I'll tell you an agadda with a halacha. The pasuk says, "Ki seita etra matzah koitzim." The pasuk says, "When a fire comes out." Which implies the word teitze means teitze me'atzma. It sounds like it means like the fire is spreading on its own. As though we're not talking about somebody actually set a fire, but rather it's spread on its own. And the pasuk though continues, shalom yishalom, amavir asabeira, the one who caused the fire has to pay. So that implies that there was somebody who caused the fire. So what is it? Is it a fire that started on its own, or is it something that somebody set? So it means like this, says Rabbi Yitzchak Napcha. We're talking about the fire that burnt the Bais HaMikdash. Now, in a certain sense, you could say it was Teitze Me'atzma. It was caused, we're the ones who caused it. We're the ones, we Jewish people, with our Averis, caused it. Nevertheless, Hashem is saying, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Olai L'Shalom Es HaBe'era Sheivarti. It is my responsibility, Hashem is saying, to pay for the fire that I caused. Even though, in other words, it was caused by our Averis, Hashem is saying as though it was not, as though he's exonerating from us and taking the responsibility on himself. Hashem is saying, I set a fire in Sion, Shenema, as the pasuk says, Vayatzes Esh B'Tzion, Hashem set a fire in Sion, in Yerushalayim, Vatoichol Yisoydeseha, and it burned the foundations of the Beis HaMikdash and of Yerushalayim. And Hashem says, in the future, I will rebuild Yerushalayim using fire. Shenema, as we have the pasuk in Zechariah, we say it in Nachem on Tisha B'Av. Hashem says, I will be a fiery wall around Yerushalayim. I will be the glory in within Yerushalayim. So Hashem is saying, and we find many times that Hashem, unlike a boss of Adam, who the wound was caused with one thing and the cure is caused with something else, we know many times Hashem cures with the exact same thing with which he wounded. So here the destruction was with fire, and Hashem is saying that I will rebuild with the very same fire that was used for destruction. So that's the Agadta part. Then Shmaitza, where is the halacha that we learn from this pasuk? You have to consider pasuk hakasav niskim amon. The pasuk is beginning by describing where his mamon caused hezek, because kiseitze esh implies that the fire spread on its own. He lit a fire in his property, which he's entitled to do, and then it spread. We're not talking about we set something deliberately. But the pasuk finishes off by calling him Mavir, the one who caused the fire. Loy malach, and then making him responsible. Loy malach ishe mishum chitzav. That teaches us, like we learned earlier in the Masechta, on what grounds is a person chayev for his fire spreading, because it's considered as though he shot an arrow and caused damage at a distance. The point being, in other words, Rashi says, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, therefore, if his fire spread, if it not only damaged the other guy's property, but caused an injury to the other guy, he's going to be chayev, not only in Nezek, but also in Tsar, and so forth. As opposed to, if we said, Ishim, Ishim, Mamoinai, the same way as we said, if you're sure injures somebody, you're not chayev for Tsar and Ripui and so forth, only Nezek. The same way we would say, if we said, Ishim, Ishim, Mamoinai, which was Rosh Lakish's position over there, then we'd say, you're potter for all these other things. But no, says Rabbi Yitzchak Napka, like Rabbi Yechanan, we say Isha Mishum Chitzav, and therefore you can hold them responsible for the direct hezek, and that is why the pasuk phrases it as Shalom Yishalom Hamavu, the one who set the fire, because we consider it that he caused the direct hezek, even though it was only that he had lit a fire in his own property of the kind that he would normally do, and then it spread because he didn't take proper precautions. So therefore, so Rabbi Yitzchak Napka is telling them, there you go, you have halacha and agadta here from the same pasuk, so that should satisfy both. To be continued tomorrow, Best Hashem, with another piece of Agadah on the subject of Eish, from which we also learn a halacha.